Thanks everybody for joining. For the second time, the Showing Up podcast was created to help you really show up for this one wild and precious life. And here we go. We're going live with Adam Tickner, survivalist expert, human, like highest potential creator, and interesting human that I promise will entertain us with some good stories. We met about 2004, and the reason we met was because I was super broken. I had had my first big chance to ski with one of the big film companies up in Canada. Was on a snow machine at 5 a.m. and literally the warm-up run, you know, like it's dark and you're like, you know, it's 5 a.m. at the trailhead. You finally get to the bottom of the line. You're nervous. You don't know anybody. You got to prove yourself. And so you go up for a little warm-up run, like nothing you would even film because it's that boring. I ended up going over the front, not seeing an old snow machine track, and broke my rib on my transceiver. It was one of the most painful injuries, and nothing happened. And let's just say I never got that opportunity to film with that group again. I come home like defeated, and that's the first time I met Adam and started training with his protocol. And so tonight we are going to talk about that if the internet will let us.
Okay. Can anybody hear me?
Boom. Yes. Run.
Okay. So going back to the first time that Lindsay and I actually started working together, she fell on her transceiver. She came in and she had a rib that had taken and completely flipped over inside her rib cage. Never met this, and it was right under her breast tissue. So we had never met. I'm 28, she's 24, something like that. And all of a sudden, she's got this strange dude rubbing her ribs underneath her breast tissue, and she's like, all right, let's do it.
I felt totally safe. That's not even what I remember. That's pretty awesome. Well played.
So it took me about 30 minutes to loosen up all the muscles in between the rib cage, called the intercostals. I loosen everything up and I grab the rib and I pull the rib out and turn it. And then it slides back into place. And she was ready to ski the next day. It was sore. I was like, it's going to suck, but you're not broken. And we fixed it. So she didn't have to, there was no tissue torn. Now I would have done the same thing, but I would have had some stuff called kinesio tape, which is this stretchy tape. And that stuff is amazing. That stuff can do all kinds of cool stuff if you know what you're doing with it. And I would tape her up and she'd be fine. She probably would have been able to ski with no pain. So that was the first time we started working together. And after that, she would come to the gym that I was training at. She would come get body work probably once a week. We'd probably train 3 times a week before I moved away. And since then, I either go back, she comes to me, or I go to her. And if there's something really broken off, then we put it back together. That's kind of how Lindsay and I met.
Yeah. And you had just such a different perspective on athletic performance coming from a military background. Can you talk a little bit about your story? Because, you know, people are used to seeing these podcasts where I interview athletes, and you're clearly an athlete, but in your case, the tactics and logistics side, you're an athlete to survive. So how do you get here?
All adventure athletes have the same needs, right? Physical. They have the same physical needs. The only difference between what she's doing is, and what I do is, I do everything at about half the capacity of what she would be able to do. Meaning if we did some skiing, I can low rent ski, right? I can ski in Jackson, maybe with a pack on and stuff, but everybody's trying to shoot at me when I do it. It changes the game. So what happens is, and I have a different load than she does, and I have to do it for different periods of time, and I don't have the same support system, but
and this is in a military situation you're talking about,
right? Whenever we're doing something, it's in a place where people are trying to hurt us, or we're trying to get information or go do whatever we're going to do. The thing about it is all the performance requirements and all the skill set requirements are the same. So it's a really nice combination to work with adventure athletes, because they understand how to suffer. They understand the need to train, because if they don't train properly and they don't eat properly, and they don't fuel themselves properly and sleep themselves properly, they're not going to perform. What a lot of people don't get with adventure athletes is it's cool, it looks good on camera, but you're giving up long-term health for right now performance and fun, right? People don't realize that you've had, I don't know, three knee surgeries, five knee surgeries. I don't know how many knees you got more knees in you than, you know, a spider, right? How many times have you ruined your knee?
Never. I've never ruined my knee. I may have had three mistakes made that where my knee suffered. At the same time, I'm disagreeing with you on like long-term. Yeah, disagree.
How many times have you ripped your knee and had to have surgery for it?
I've had ACL repairs on both knees and one meniscus kind of cleanup.
And then that ACL, is it still yours or did you get it from a cadaver?
Both these ACLs are mine, hamstring grafts.
So you had to rip part of your ham. They had to take part of your hamstring to make it into an ACL.
Luckily, my body's so strong, it was fine.
So long-term health and wellness on that is it's not as strong as it was with what you were born with, is my point.
Disagree. Totally disagree.
You can disagree all you want. Look at the science. The science.
Okay. Well, I'm saying as an athlete, as who's become more educated and I guess you could say the wise word, but really like learning about my body, a lot in part to what you've taught me and actually getting discipline about gluten and that sort of thing. I absolutely feel stronger than ever. And that's that I'm performing better.
I'm not saying you're not stronger. I'm not saying you can't get stronger. I'm saying you'll never be able to reach the strength potential you could have reached with what you had before.
Okay, that's limiting belief. We can move on. I can agree with this.
Before we move on, what I want people to realize is all adventure athletes are willing to make that compromise because you're putting your life on the line and your body on the line for one experience that no one else gets. No one else gets to, very few people get to get out of a helicopter in Alaska and ski down that mountain. Very few people get to climb the nose of El Cap well, quickly. Very few people get to go, you know, proximity flying in the Netherlands. That just doesn't happen, right? Every single one of those people is willing to put their life and their body on the line for the experience that they're getting right now. And so what's interesting about that is because that is the key, the people that do what I do, which is, you know, right, currently I do austere security and I move things and people through odd countries all over the world. I protect.
What's austere? Explain that, because that's.
So let's, a high net worth individual needs to go through the Congo. They need to go through Afghanistan. They call me and my team. You need to move $1 billion worth of bonds through the Middle East. You call me and my team and we'll make sure that kind of stuff happens. You, whatever that might be, we make sure that happens and nobody gets hurt. That's what I currently do. Now, we have the same need for our physicality and for our emotional and mental stability to be at this level. And so we're willing to do all the work for it. Where I have clients that they want to be healthy and well, but they don't need the performance. Let's put it this way. If I take a race car, you're a race car, right? Can you see that you're a race car, Lindsay?
I'm a race car.
Okay. How many people in their home car have the PSI in their tires exact? Nobody. Why? Because it's not a race car. How many of them have had their car tuned exactly with the right amount, the exact amount of fuel, the perfect type of oil, the perfect type of stuff? They don't do it. Why? Because you don't need it. The longevity of the race car drops when you start to do that. It's everything in that car is better. Everything in that car is better for performance. It's not better for longevity. I don't want to drive a World Rally Championship car through the streets of Philadelphia. I want to drive a shitty Toyota that I can run over potholes, right? Because you're an athlete, or because in a tactical world, I'm a tactical athlete, we have to be willing to have that performance level. So we have to do everything right or our chances of survival drop. That's what's cool about working with performance athletes, is the mindset is the same. They do all the tiny work, or they should do all the tiny work, the little bitty micro stuff to get as much as they can out of their body. That's the big difference from what an athlete would do compared to what a client would do. A regular client, they don't need all that. They just need to have
I get it. I totally get it. I really want to give our audience a picture of all the things that represent what you do. Could you give an overview in, you know, 30 seconds of the of each piece that you're an expert in and that we want to talk about today?
So I teach nonverbal communication or body language.
Nonverbal communication and body language.
I teach that all over. I teach heads of state. I've been in courtrooms. I've taught graduate counseling programs. I teach people what scratching is when you're talking or blocking. That's the kind of stuff that I do. As a matter of fact, I just put up an online course. Feel free to check it out. It's on my website. Okay, done with that. I teach health, wellness, fitness, rehab, which is what I do with you. Okay. And then I do...
And those are the clients you're referring to as well. So you do that with clients that are both, you know, trying to perform at the highest level and just live on an everyday basis to their highest across the board.
Getting people to where what they need for their level of life and what they want. Right? So I work with some, whether they're business people that are extremely high functioning business people that need to be able to be healthy when they're traveling internationally, to athletes like yourself. To just a stay-at-home mom that has seven kids or three kids and they're running around and they're pulling their hair out trying to homeschool right now, and how to do stress management and food for all that and fitness for all that and keep all that stuff on lock so they can be healthy during this whole
thing. Yeah. I'd love for you to at some point tell some stories around some of the women that you have trained from basically being bedridden to some of the strongest women out there. So yeah, I'd love to get there at some point, but for now, an overview of what we're going to talk about today.
And then I do tactical stuff. So for the last 20 years, I've been splitting my time evenly between what we said earlier, which is austere security, to doing health and wellness stuff. So that's kind of what we're working with. And we're going to try to cover a lot of that and how they kind of connect and how they connect across the board. The better you are at those, the happier life you're going to have. You're just going to be a happier person. So
that, as well as like the current landscape with the coronavirus and, you know, tactical advice from your expertise as to things that we should be thinking about right now.
So when you look at it like that, most of our grandparents or the generations, my generation and older, I'm in my 40s, our grandparents lived through the Great Depression. So a lot of the stuff that our parents and grandparents did was set up for something just like this, which is you don't have a lot, you can't go around and get everything. We've forgotten how to do that. So if you were to just go interview your grandparents and how they set up their life, you would have a whole different ball game on how to deal with this coronavirus. If you actually sat down and listened to it, it'd be a really effective way to gather that. On the flip side of that, the tactical side, most people don't pay attention to their surroundings. So as people, you know, most of the drugs in the U.S. come from outside of the U.S., in a sense, so the supply chain is not working the same. Drugs are going to be in short supply. They've already started. They're in short supply. So the people that need the drugs are going to start robbing people, or petty crime and violent crime on that lower level is going to accelerate because they're going to need more money for their drugs.
Do you really think that that's going to happen though?
It's already happened in the major cities. Violent crime across is skyrocketed. Carjackings, car break-ins. Like, I live in Philly right now. When you look at the statistics, they're up. And there's a bunch of reasons. One, everybody has to wear masks. So when they do have, a lot of the major cities that people don't know about are covered in cameras. Like places like New York and Philly and LA, you can't, if you have a crime, there's three cameras looking at you in these major cities. So if you don't have, if you can wear a face mask so they can't see who you are, it's a pretty anonymous way to roll around. So the odds of them catching people are going to drop. So you have that issue. You have the fact that you're going to have, some of the cities are letting bad guys out of jail. That's increased the crime rate across the major cities. So in an urban environment, those things are stacked up. in a rural environment, you guys aren't going to have the same issue. You're going to have more of a food shortage than you will a drug shortage. Because the drugs that places in rural do are either meth, which is made in the house, or weed, which everybody grows in their backyard out in the middle of nowhere.
You really think that that's happening? I'm not seeing a shortage of food. You know, are you talking about in the future? Or?
No, I think if you're going to see a shortage, that's where you're going to see it. You're going to for rural.
Okay, for rural communities, sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's say, you know, I mean, what is your advice for? Let's say most of the people watching aren't going to be mountain people in rural communities. You know, what advice do you have for people as a whole that this sort of, I guess, crisis should have you thinking about? You know, like, I've heard guns are selling out. I've heard, you know, like you said, if you feel like you're prepared for a food shortage, what else should we be thinking about?
So there's a few things that I think people should do. One is the old school victory garden. It's the perfect time to start planting food. If you're in a rural community, plant some food. If you live in an urban environment, there's a whole project called guerrilla farming. I'm not advocating this because it could be illegal, right? But a lot of the public spaces on the trails are not. What would happen if you just happened to dump a bunch of kale seeds on the side of the trail on accident, and it, you know, birds went around and deposited them, and you dump some tomato seeds and whatnot? Instead of having poison ivy, you got tomatoes. In New York City, for example, there's a guy that runs around and he teaches you how to walk through Central Park and get your whole food, everything you need, vegetable wise. So there's a lot of old knowledge where you can go find those people that are weird, that are eating, you know, that are going out and picking edibles on the side of the trail, and people think they're crazy, but it doesn't cost anything and it's there. So the whole idea of guerrilla farming is to make it easy for public spaces to have fruits and vegetables grown.
To feel empowered in your own neighborhood. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. All right, what else? Do we need to go get a gun and learn how to shoot it?
The other side of it is buy a cow. Oh, I can't afford the cow. Get the community, the block, to buy the cow from a local farmer where that cow had a name. It roamed and ate grass. It was a happy cow, not one of these feedlot cows. It's a happy cow. You're working on local community. You're fixing the planet. And we can go into all of that if you want with Diane Rogers and how big herbivores sequester carbon and prep the land to grow food on. But it was a happy cow. It prepped all your land. And you take that cow and the community buys it, you split it amongst yourselves, and you have enough food to last the season, whatever that season might be. So your whole block buys into that kind of stuff. And you're setting up, you know, buy local, right? You're really setting up that concept of taking care of the local community. And even here in Philly, it's really easy to go find a farm that's 45 minutes out and get a whole cow or a whole pig or a whole sheep or whatever you want. So it's not that difficult to set that kind of concept up. So those are the big ones that I would do for food. For security, if you have a dog, train it. And your dog will take care of you. Your dog is a dog. It's not a person. Train your dog. I'm tired of seeing these 110-pound beautiful dogs that spend 15 minutes on the pavement twice a day taking a crap on the pavement. It's just not good for the dog, and the dog's not going to serve you, and the dog's not happy. It's not a happy dog. But if you train your dog and you get your dog out in the woods and you get your dog out for a run and you do all those things, it keeps you healthy. It keeps the dog healthy, and the dog is more likely to support you in the case of home invasion or carjacking or whatever that might look like. So take care of your dog. Dogs are much, much easier to handle than a shotgun, unless you actually know what you're doing. If you're going to buy a gun, which a lot of people are going to do, train with it. And you got to train with a gun. I was when I did that TV show, there was the girl from Montana who built log cabins.
Okay, what TV show?
I did The Colony, which is kind of funny because it was a flu pandemic, right? I did The Colony for Discovery Channel. It was a survival show. There was a girl on there who was from Montana who built log cabins. And they do, and she and her husband build log cabins with chainsaws. And they're some of the most amazing woodworkers I've ever seen. They were visiting when I lived in LA. They came down to visit, and we were going to go camping out in the middle of nowhere. And we walk in California, you got to get a camping permit for the night, for an overnight. And you got to get it from the local sporting goods store. So we walked in the local sporting goods store, and there was a guy buying a shotgun that had never owned a gun before. And we find out that he had had a home invasion, and he was freaked out and he was buying a shotgun. So I said to him, I teach people how to use guns. I'm not saying you need to do it with me. There's a lot of really good guys here because the military was here, but you need to train if you're going to buy a shotgun. And he's like, oh, that's okay. I've been watching it on YouTube. When I moved to Jackson Hole, I had no idea how to ski. And friends like you and Rob and some other friends of mine taught me how to ski. Am I a good skier? No, I'm not a great skier. Can I ski? Yeah, I can ski. I had experts that use it, that really understand it, teach me how to do it. And sped up how fast did I... Learning how to ski in Jackson as an adult is hard, because Jackson is a really hard place to ski. And to be able to do that in my late 20s, early 30s is amazing. And it's because I was able to go to experts. It's something I didn't know. I found experts to teach me. That's how you have to do it if you're going to buy a gun. Make sure experts teach you. And that's not your local cop. That's guys that have had to either use them in a defensive or an offensive manner that have had them used against them. So don't just go out and buy a gun. It's cool. You're right. I support it. Second Amendment. Right. But if you're
going to get anything else on the tactical side of, you know, the current situation.
In what sense? What do you
mean? You talked about, let's all start growing our own food, even if that means through the sidewalks in our neighborhoods. You talked about a dog and how really training that dog well could provide an amazing amount of security should you need it in case, you know, the real grid does go down. Do you feel like we've really covered that as far as, you know, what you want to share around your expertise, given our plan? Mean,
there's a whole bunch of info on that, but it's what I would say to people is the average human is designed to walk 6 miles a day for food, right? And how many of you out there that are watching can walk 6 miles today carrying a small load and then walk 6 miles tomorrow without being blown up with weight on your body? How many of you can carry a loved one a couple miles? How many of you, whether that's your kid or your partner, how many of you can carry a load of food back? That's how we were wired. If you can't do that, you're not strong enough. You can't do that, you're not mobile enough, and you're not healthy enough. So I would say that the stronger you are, and I'm not just talking about how much can you bench press and squat. That's part of it, but that's not what I'm talking about. But the stronger you are, the harder you are to kill, whether that's disease or whether that's a bad guy. So you have, when I'm saying strong, I'm talking about through every range of motion. Can you do a pull-up? Can you climb a wall? Can you jump down off of a wall? Can you carry your partner? Can you carry half your body weight on your back for 2 miles? These are things that you need to have. I did a blog post for something called Black Scout Survival. You'll see it on my website. If you go to my website, it's about survival fitness. You need that fitness, not just to look good and feel good, but in case something does happen. What happens if a couple years ago in Philly, there was an ice storm and it shut down part of the highway that had no exit. Those people couldn't exit for almost a day and a half. They were 5 miles from home. Why couldn't they just put on some shoes that they had in the back of the car and walk? Because they had dresses on, they had high heels, they didn't have a nice pair of shoes in the car. You have to think about, if you're in a vehicle, how do you get home if your vehicle breaks down? And there is no Uber, there is no taxi, there is no AAA. How do you get yourself home? How do you communicate that to your family if you don't have cell service because cell service went down because of a storm or you're in the middle of nowhere. An example that I used to talk to people about LA is I'm driving from LA to Vegas one day. This is modern time. I see a brand new car on the side of the road, shut down, middle of summer, 120 out. They have an infant. There's no cell service out there. How do they protect that infant from the sun in 120 degree heat with a car that doesn't run? What happens if you're driving over the pass, any pass, pick a pass, and there's an avalanche and it pushes your car off the road? What happens if you're in Hawaii and there's a mudslide, or California, there's a mudslide and pushes you off the road? How do you get home? So it's not just one idea. It's, do you have the skill set for the environment you live in to at least get yourself home? And do you have the physicality to do that also? So you need both of those things.
It's crazy how much resistance I feel in hearing this stuff because it's scary, right? We're so used to the system being there, and we've never considered it not being there because why would we? This is the first time when that consideration has kind of struck at least my generation. And there's a lot of resistance, at least I feel, to like learning these sort of practical skills that you're like, well, that's what my grandparents, you know, had to deal with, not my generation. It's really scary just to think about.
It's scary to think about, but it's also, what is everything that you do is based on that fitness. You mountain bike, you boot pack up the side of a mountain and ski down, right?
Yeah, for fun, not for survival. And I don't plan on or want to do it for survival. I like taking a bath every night.
No one says you can't if you set up your survival situation properly. But the thing is, you have the skill. Like how many skiers, even really good recreational skiers, take an avalanche class?
Well, I would say everyone now. A few short years ago, probably not. But who had real survival skills in the mountains, or who could build a shelter, or who could build a fire? Very few.
No, like how many of you guys? I know you guys build snow shelters out there.
Not everyone.
How many of your friends can build it? One out of six of you can build a snow cave.
Well, I'd say a lot of the most notable, at least ski athletes, you know, people on the Olympic level or in a terrain park, not a chance.
Well, that's because they can ski out.
Well, it's because, again, you know, these environments have been curated and so that they will be the same time and time again. And that's where you can compete and measure each other and, you know, go to the Olympics.
Right.
So, I think these hard skills are they're coming back into flavor. And, you know, that's why you're such a pro right now and so awesome to learn from. I remember one time. You maybe go on a hike at night in the pitch black and have to feel my way down this like rugged single track, which is so frustrating. And it really helped me develop other senses when I was unable to use my eyes. You know?
Yeah, we were headed out to Wind Cave. And what was wild about that is, this is for everybody else, is while we were hiking, I was picking different plants that are edible in the dark, no moon, and I'd hand you hyssop, and I'd be like, this is hyssop. This is good for this, this, and this, and this. And I would have you taste it while we were doing it. So when you figure out the skill, so what ends up happening is you get jammed up. You get stuck somewhere in the mountains, and it's dark. How do you get out? Do you get out? Do you make the choice? So on the same token, I was on a first date in Hawaii, and this girl was a climber. She and I climbed together, and it was her area. And at the time, I was still a sniper and I was a reconnaissance Marine. So reconnaissance is kind of like the SEALs, but for the Marine Corps, we jump out of helicopters and swim in or dive in and sneak around and steal stuff and come back out and look at things that don't want to be looked at. And we do that in the ocean. So I did that and I was a sniper. So I spent a lot of, and I was specifically a jungle guy. That was what I specialized in.
That's also what she said about you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She did. So we're in her neck of the woods in Hawaii, and it was a jungle. And I said, what do I need to bring? How long is it going to be? She said, 45 minutes. I said, do I need to take any of this stuff for overnight? She said, no. I said, okay, cool. I always have a little bit of stuff anyway.
Such as?
Like a tarp or a Cool Max blanket or a thin wool blanket or I don't use Mylar blankets. They don't work.
What about water? Do you always have water with you?
Go anywhere without water. Even in a jungle.
What about snacks? Less important?
Some
people may tell you, think differently. I'm with you on as long as you have water.
You have enough fat on your body, every human, unless you're anorexic, that can walk from Miami to New York. It'd be miserable, but you can do it with the fat that's in your body to walk from Miami to New York without having any food.
Okay, so you got tarp, water.
Just a really small pack.
A thin layer of wool. What else?
That's about it.
Copy. So okay. What about like a tool? Do you bring a tool with you ever? A knife?
You're asking about a kit that I carry now. I'm telling you about the story. Let me finish the story.
Okay, Hawaii, jungle. Go ahead.
So we go out, and it turned into a two-hour hike. We came back. It was dark. And I said, I'm not going anymore. And she's like, well, we could see the fire in the little village that we had that we lived in. You could see it. And I'm like, I'm not going down there. It was right on the beach. I'm like, I'm not going. And it was still maybe 3 miles away, and it was jungle walls down. And she said, well, I'm going to go. I said, well, you go. You fall. I'm not coming to get you. You're on your own. This is first date, by the way. So she's like, fine. So we set up a micro shelter right there on the side of the trail, because I'm not moving off the trail at this point. We get up in the morning, and right where she was going to walk was a 60-foot cliff that she would have just fallen down. So you have to know when to shelter in place, right? You have to know those things, and you have to have enough comfort with your skill level. You have to know what your skill level is. You also have to be willing to know that sleeping overnight is not going to suck. Right. It's not going to hurt you to sleep outside. Too many people want that bath at night, that they're willing to push the envelope for no reason. So knowing that, but at the same time practicing. So we were on a pretty safe trail when you and I did it, to practice completely black, dark trail walking and learning how to follow a trail at night like that. So, those are the two extremes. So what do you have in your kit? I always have a knife. I always have water. I always have something that's got sugar in it, but not for me. I have it I use it for traps. So if I'm going to be out for any length of time in a survival situation, it's going to attract animals, and I'm going to get more calories because the animal's going to come get it. I'll get the animal. I'll harvest the animal. That's how I use that. So if I'm going to be out for a short period of time, that's what I take. If I'm going to be out for longer, then yeah, I have food. So
what would you bring that you could create a trap out of, you know, in a small kit?
If you understand how to set traps, you just need some cordage. You need some thin cord. You need some, like, the wire from the inside, the copper wire from the inside of USB-Cs, you know, this stuff. If you can get the copper wire out of there. So your headphones.
Sounds like a whole episode.
Yeah, you're not.
Getting trapped with Adam.
We're not going to learn how to make a trap in this podcast. No. You got to practice those.
Okay. Okay. Wow. It's interesting the mindset that you clearly go into the outdoors with that isn't the norm. Is that the military that kind of set that? And I guess with, let's say we have, you know, 20 minutes left, what do we want to make sure we cover today?
Mindset is more important than skill set. So you can have all the skills in the world. So why do kids that have been out in the woods for, I don't know, a week with nothing survive? They have exposure issues and they need some help on the way out, but they survive, and they're not as good at regulating body core temperature as adults, where you have adults that'll die within 36 hours in the same environment. And it's because their mindset is different. They're able to handle stress at a different level. You see a kid explode, go through all the hormone, all the cortisol, all the adrenaline that happens, all the fight, flight, or freeze. They use it all. They don't try to compartmentalize it. And then they go chase fairies and grasshoppers, and then they lay next to a log and cover themselves in the leaves when they're cold, and then they lick, you know, something like a wet stone to get
they're water. Able to be very present.
Yeah, their mindset is better. Present timing, right? Where adults, their
anxiety.
They spend so much time stressed out with poor stress management and lack of, you know, so if we back it all the way up to education, I chose not to go to college. And I chose not to go to college because what I saw in all education was it was information based, not experiential based. So I wanted to apprentice with professionals, with the people that I thought were the best, which is what I ended up doing. After the Marine Corps, I went to massage school. I didn't like it. I went and found the best body worker I had ever met. It was a Navajo shaman that taught me body language at the same time. I apprenticed with him for 4 years. I went and studied with a chiropractor, an osteopath, I thought was really good. If you apprentice with a master, you're going to get not just the information that you would have gotten, but you're going to get an understanding you don't get repeating information. And education teaches you to repeat information. You don't have anything on the other end of it. So because you didn't experience it. So you may have a lot of knowledge, but it's like the YouTube guy we talked about at the beginning with the shotgun. He had the knowledge of it. He didn't have the experience of it. And he wasn't going to get the experience of it. So he's not going to affect with that tool. So if you decide that you want to have this information, it's not just reading the book. It's going and being with childlike enthusiasm, studying somebody who's a professional with it, really getting down and getting in the dirt and figuring it out and getting those dirt skills, whatever that is, whether that's I want to learn how to do body work, whether that's I want to learn how to ski, whether that's I want to learn how to computer program. Got to go find an expert and do it, like really get down and do it. So that's probably the biggest thing that I would tell anyone is no matter what you're trying to do, if you're really trying to be world-class at something, find someone that understands how to teach that is world-class, that's willing to teach you. And most of us that are badass at what we do, most of us really good at it, want to share the information. We don't want to be the only ones. The people that want to be the only ones, they're not really that good at it most of the time. So go find somebody that really wants to share.
So basically, this is the first of at least 2 and possibly up to 6 episodes that we're going to do with Adam, because he's so knowledgeable in so many different ways. And obviously, his stories are really informative and really long sometimes.
they get bananas, right? What I say is, as a listener or a watcher, if you have something that you want to know about, anything that I know, which is anything about health and wellness, and anything about body language and anything about security, send us an email, send us a text message, send us a DM. We'll make sure to answer those, as many of them as we can get to, because it'll help. If not, I'll just talk, and I can talk all day. I don't really care, but I want to make sure you get the information to actually start learning something. And the story that I have is cool. You can read about my story. You can watch a lot of videos about my story. Go on my website. I have 3 different versions of it from 3 different perspectives. You can see me all over the place.
Well, look at the best part about Adam is his stories. And so within the last, 10 minutes we've got here, tell us a good story, Adam. First, I'd love a story that we can relate to as people who love the outdoors and the mountains. But in your case, like in the jungle, surviving, on a mission. Tell us what it's like to be a Marine sniper.
There's 2 decent ones. I'll tell you the first one that's really quick. There are 4 of us, and we're patrolling through this jungle. There are 4 giant trees that are about 10 yards apart. And from the ground to about 35 feet up, those giant trees, they're bigger around than we were covered from the bottom all the way up with a spider web. And a spider, you guys can't see it, but I have giant hands, like the spider was bigger than my hand, and there were huge bugs, and there were rodents, and there were birds stuck in the web. And we're like, oh, that's gross. That's foul. 3 or 4 days later, we're patrolling back. We're sneaking through the jungle. And then three of us hit a different part of that web at the same time. And from head to toe, we feel this. And, you know, I've got 110 pounds of gear on me. I got a rifle. I got all my gear on. I'm sneaking. And you can't make any noise because you don't want to get caught. And I hit this web. And it's like head to toe. It's like these four super badass dudes, right? We're like, yeah, we're the alpha males. We're the best in the world. And then, and you can feel the spider run down the web. You're just ripping stuff off. It was probably one of the most foul things that I've had to experience was this spider going, and we have no idea where it is.
So, I haven't even heard that one. I have heard the time when you were trudging through a river for 4 days and you're like, bro, you stink. And he's like, no, dude, you stink. And then you realize you'd been trudging down a river of dog poop for 4 days.
We were a similar country. We got in, my sniper buddy got dropped off. We were doing a 2-week mission. We just jumped out of the helicopter. Again, you got as a sniper, you're carrying at that time. We had three huge radios that we had to carry for two people, and then we had to have 2 weeks worth of batteries. So that alone, about 50, 60 pounds, it was rough. So our gear was about 120 pounds, just our ruck and our rifle. That didn't include any of the stuff that stays on your body all the time, like magazines and water and food and shit like that.
That's a lot of weight.
Yeah. So we're strolling through the jungle, and as we're going through the jungle, it's super steep canyon walls, and we have to go 20, 30 miles. And so we slide in the water because of how we had to get. It was a village over here we wanted to go around. But if we would have had to go way around it, or we could go through the water and be sneaky sneak. So we were sneak through the water about 2 hours in. We're covered up to water in here, and we can just kind of slide in. And there's a lot of dark spaces to hide so we can listen, and there wasn't anybody around, and there were no boats going up and down the water, so we chose that path. So we slide in. We're in the water. And all of a sudden, I look at my buddy, and I'm like, dude, you fucking stink, man. You fucking stink. And he looked at me. He's like, I was going to tell you the same thing. I said, we've been in this jungle for less than 2 hours. You stink. And normally after about a week, everybody really stinks, right? But this is two hours in. And so all of a sudden we just hear barking and barking, and getting chased by a dog is no fun. Dogs are not fun. They're amazing at what they do. And a pack of dogs is not something you want to be fucking with. So we climb out of this river bottom up this steep hill, and we're creeping around the side. And as we creep around the side, we look down on this dog kennel where they had hundreds and hundreds of dogs, and they were just spraying the dog shit into the river and just washing it. So we had patrolled up a dog shit river for 2.5 hours. We stunk so bad for so long. It was probably that one and the spider one were pretty rough patrols. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's some heavy suffering where your mental game's got to be on. Yeah.
So yeah, and then you have to think about the fact that now you stink in a way that's not, doesn't smell like people. So if you hear a lot of times about survival, you hear about bushcraft survival, you see all these guys and you know, spinning a hand drill, and you see all these guys and, you know, playing frontiersmen. And then you have the other guys that they have all the gadgets where they're sparking fires. So that's a primitive bushcraft. And then you have a modern version of survival. There's the other side of survival is military, which is you're running from somebody. You can't start all these fires. You can't do all that. Part of that is you can't stink like that. You can't be a walker.
So what did you do?
Luckily as a sniper, you're further off of a target. You know, we can be further away than say direct action unit or a reconnaissance unit where I got to go actually get something. So sometimes you're sneaking into sometimes you're sneaking into things and collecting things that need to be collected, that maybe that person's not supposed to have. But as a sniper, you're usually observing something. You do more observing than you actually do shooting. Most people think of snipers and they only think of the shooting. The shooting's easy. The getting the information and the intelligence and getting in and out, that's the hard part. So we can stay a little further away. So it just made us have to be more technically aware when we were doing what we were doing.
Awesome. Well, okay. So in our last few minutes, what would you say we're going to talk about in next week? As far as human performance goes, as far as, how we should be eating, how we should be thinking, what your kind of training program looks like. Let's talk a little bit about that invite people to ask questions for next time.
Ask whatever you want. What we'll do is I have a pyramid of health and wellness that I'll put up, and that pyramid of health and wellness will talk about the difference between longevity, quality of life, and performance. And the higher you get up the performance ladder, the smaller the pyramid gets. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about each piece on that, and how you can use it in your daily life to be more productive. So we'll talk about that next time.
Awesome. Well, this is maybe, hopefully, just the beginning of sharing some of the knowledge that Auburn brings to the table. So thanks for joining the first ever YouTube Live. I saw so many friendly faces show up. So once again, thanks for joining. And this is just the beginning, Showing Up Podcast Live. And we'll see you in a week. Wednesday, same time. Adios.